You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, I'm your host, Captain Dean, and my guest on this episode is an incredibly talented guitarist and lap steel guitarist, or however you would call that, a lap steelist, perhaps. He's been involved in the local music scene for many years, mostly known with bands Pilot and Outhouse Etiquette. Cody Meek, welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Thank you very much. I don't know about the talented part, but the incredible part I agree with.
Incredibly talented and not wanting to admit it.
I can either have incredible or talented, one or the other.
Well, Cody, you have been in the local music scene for quite some time. Are you from here?
I've lived in Glasgow all my life.
Okay, were you born and raised in Glasgow?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, this episode is being taped in your home studio, so
down
to speak.
Here in my basement.
So this is the first time a episode of the Sound Atlas has been recorded in Glasgow, which is kind of cool in my eyes, because Glasgow and Bowling Green have always kind of been like sister cities in a way, as far as the way musicians and talent kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, you guys get all our money. We have to go down
now
there.
Now that you've got bars and stuff, I guess that's helping out a lot.
It helped a little bit, but I still rather go down there to eat supper a lot of times. Not that we don't have good places here, but Glasgow, the economy is not up to par with Bowling Green economy. And people in Bowling Green would tell you it sucks there too, but I don't think it does.
It is interesting, though, how both Glasgow and Bowling Green have always been very strong with music and the amount of musical talent that have come out of both areas. And of course, a lot of the talent from this area goes to Bowling Green to play shows, but the level of talent that's come out of here is quite amazing. I mean, you guys had Backstage Music for a long time. Obviously, David Barrick's studio has been up here for a long time. So I've just personally always thought Glasgow and Bowling Green had a really cool, almost musical connection.
It definitely does. There's a lot of good talent come out of Glasgow over the last, 50 years or longer. But in my lifetime, there's been a lot of good bands, and there's probably still some good bands coming up. Glasgow was more of a rock and roll or a hard rock scene compared to all the Bowling Green bands. Not that there wasn't hard rock or coming out of Bowling Green, but
right. There's
always metal and hard rock here. I could say that in Bowling Green, especially as times have progressed. That's not welcome in Bowling Green anymore. You can't. There's not any place to play hard rock or metal, and that's maybe another discussion for another time.
That's part two.
Well, I got a lot to say about it.
Well, let's go back to the beginning, and you are technically a guitarist, right? You don't really dabble in any other instruments.
I've got a drum set in there that old Ludwig said I'll show you before we leave.
Yeah,
I mess around in it, but no, I'm not a drummer. I had a bass guitar, but you've always
stuck to guitar. See, a lot of people I've interviewed, including myself, are kind of these multi-instrument people that do different things in different bands. But as long as I've known you, you've always just pretty much been a guitarist.
Oh, yeah. That was always going to be my first choice for an instrument, and it's always going to be the thing I'll be the best at.
Well, there you go. And let's go back to the beginning. What got you into music, and when did you get started?
I knew I always kind of wanted to do it. I'd been playing guitar since I was 11, and I had, had friends in high school we jammed with, after school and whatnot, and none of us had it would always be like one of these deals where a couple of guys play guitar, then another guy may have a drum set, but you didn't know anybody played bass, or maybe you met a bass player, but then you didn't have a drummer.
Right.
There was never a full, configuration. It's always just people just getting together to play songs. It's, other people's songs.
Right.
And I'd had some friends, one friend, Wes Buchanan, we'll talk about. He was in Pilot. And I had known him a long time. And eventually he had a band that ended up being Pilot. And with a guy that was in his grade, Tony Oswald. And I rode the bus with Wes and ran into him at a football game one day. I was in high school, and I guess he was still in middle school. He said, "Hey, I've got this band with Tony. You should come play with us. And we've got a drum machine."
How long had you been playing guitar at that point?
I'd been playing probably since I was 11. So I was
about,
I was 16 whenever I, okay. or 15 or 16. So, I was driving whenever I ran into him. Right. So I was 16. And keep in mind, I jammed with other guys, but not in a band. I never played
any Pilot
shows.
Was your first, band.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely the first band that played. Any that any effort was put into trying to market
right.
ourselves as a band and book shows and all
that.
Well,
a lot
of
people start off in bands that never leave the garage, and you know that a lot of people have those stories, but
I was curious
to get to that, so you kind of answered two
I had a couple of guys that I jammed with on a regular basis that you know they still play to this day, but
that was more of the paying dues cutting.
I wouldn't call it even that. It was just fun. We just had fun. I was a that's where I became a good player, you know, playing with these guys, learning right. songs with them, and eventually they, you know, they've thought enough of me to say, okay, hey, he's a really good player, and they had been playing longer than I have, and not to brag, but maybe I had surpassed them at some point, and they mm-hmm. said, oh, man, you're a really good player, and they give me the big head, I guess, you know, to say, but of course, the music we were playing was like classic rock, and, you know, the modern day hard rock stuff of the early 2000s,
right,
in the late 90s. Anyway, I met Wes, and he said, hey, come over and jam. And I went over there, and he had a drum machine, and Tony was over there. And, you know, I learned their songs, and it was kind of like an industrial sound, obviously, with that drum machine. But, you know, it very metal. You know, everything was in drop D.
Right.
Of course, I was wanting to do all these leads, you know, like a metal, you know, extreme metal leads or 80s metal type leads, because that was what I was really into at the time. And they said, no, you can't do that. So I eventually had to adapt to that.
And you said, oh, yeah, watch me.
Well, no, I did it. It didn't work. It sounded cool, but it just didn't work. And it wasn't, you know, I've always been behind the times. even now, but more so now than ever. But, you know, eventually I learned that, okay, after we kept jamming it, you know, there was a boundary of right. sort, you know, they're going to stay in this area of playing. And not that it wasn't complex, it just wasn't a lot of room for leads
right.
at that point. Now, eventually, Pilot ended up doing some stuff like that.
I do remember that time of music in a way, like a lot of bands coming up and coming out around that time of the late 90s, early 2000s, the whole guitar solo thing kind of died off.
Yeah, it wasn't cool anymore.
It wasn't cool to be the lead rock and roll guy with your hair in the wind and blowing out some.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to be the whole time. I mean, that's all I ever wanted. And then all of a sudden it wasn't cool anymore, but it came back.
Yep.
You know, metal had a big resurgence, what we would call it, modern extreme metal in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people would call it new metal, but it was a branch of that, I guess. But anyway, we played for a couple of years.
So the formation of Pilot was around what
2000.
2000, okay.
I would say 2000.
Because I came to see you guys one night at night class, and they wouldn't let me in. Because
you weren't a student.
Because I was not a student. And I was like, hey, I've always been able to get in here, yeah. but they had changed the rules. And you came out, and I was able to say, hey, I'm here, but they won't let me in. I'm sorry. And so I just kind of hung out around.
If I remember correctly, I made them let everybody in, and they agreed.
They wouldn't let me in.
Well.
It may have happened after I left.
We brought a shitload of Glasgow people. And, of course, I was a student. I think we all were, actually. But I threw a big fit about it. I said, hey, we brought all these people.
Yep.
And we never played there again.
Open the doors and
that place was
let them watch.
I mean, it was a cool idea that they had a show, you know, a place to play shows on the campus.
Well,
I was
playing there
a bunch of jackasses
a decade before, and it used to be no rules. I mean, everybody was welcome, and it was cool, especially on the weekends. But I think things had started to turn around that time as far as campus. Like,
yeah, story of my life.
You're always behind.
I'm always behind the fucking times.
So Pilot forms, that's like your first real band.
Yeah.
You guys were fairly active in the scene. I remember seeing your name on many flyers and many show promotions. Where all did you play, and how long did it last?
Well, we played our first show in 2001, and you know, played at a Papa John's down here in Glasgow in the parking lot with another band called Chosen. Anyway, there was several bands from Glasgow doing, you know, hard, you know, metal. We'll call it metal. And we would just all try to book shows whenever we could. Of course, I worked in radio at the time. This is another, I guess, a big part of my life. At this time of my life,
right.
I worked at Commonwealth Broadcasting, and I was a host of a local music show.
Oh, that's right. I remember
that's how we met. And I'd met a lot of...
That's how we met. That was a foggy time for me.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, I met a lot of other bands similar that I would want to play with. I mean, pretty much anybody I met, other than my real close friends, I met through that job up there or just through playing music in general.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
What was the show called? Just the local show?
Well, or? At first it was called Local Access.
That's right.
It was Tony Rose and myself, and then he quit doing it for a while. They moved it to Bowling Green. I quit doing it for a while. Mm-hmm. It fell apart because a guy named Jonesy was involved in it. You don't know him? He's a jackass. Anyway, they said they begged for me to come back to do it again. I did it. My friend Ben, who's in E-Town now, still works for the company.
Right.
He helped me host it, and we kind of went in business for ourselves. I'm not gonna lie. I was exclusive to bands at that point. There was like two halves of it. There was a half I consider that I did with Tony, mm-hmm. and he was more on the scene in the know than I was. And then the second half was kind of, well, I was on my own, and if I wasn't going to bars. I wasn't even old enough to go to bars yet.
That's true.
I didn't know a lot was going on at the bar scene in Bowling Green. Unless somebody called me and said, hey, I'd like to be on the show, and I would let them on, as long as they just weren't awful. And then some bands I still let on there that were terrible, and I shouldn't have let on there. But regardless, we'll get to that later if you want to. But
that's how we all get started.
The pilot thing, we started playing the Java House a lot.
Yeah.
The Java House was a big place, or a big deal for us, because they'd let anybody play. They didn't give a shit what you did, as long as you give them a third of the door.
Right.
And we would play with usually another band, and it would be packed. Of course, 100 people was packed in there, and it was uncomfortably.
It's one of those shotgun rooms, too.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable how out of control the crowds would be in such a small room. And I remember we played there with Perfect Confusion, KG Elephant. And they probably brought 100 people. We probably brought 100 people because they couldn't both get in at the same time. Mm-hmm. Their crowd hated us, and our crowd hated them. So it was a complete switch of the
great billing.
Yeah, I mean, we just thought it would. I guess we made good money at the door.
Yeah,
but I mean, not that we didn't like those guys. We wanted to do a show, or they wanted to do a show, and we didn't realize it.
Like you said, that's a podcast in itself. Of the downside of the scene is there's always been that tug of war kind of thing.
It was a tug of war with the crowd. It wasn't with the band. It's just that they weren't into us, and our crowd wasn't into them.
Right.
Of course, they were. I don't know what they were back then. They were, I don't know, some kind of form of classic rock back then with some modern twist. But anyway, then we did the same thing with Blackstone Cherry. And, we knew those guys, and their crowd hated us. Our crowd didn't really like them. So Seven Limbs was one of the bands that the crowds missed. Seven Limbs was a band we played with a lot.
Yeah.
Eventually, we started playing with Layden, not at the Java House, but our crowds went perfect together.
Right.
Our crowds went really well with, this band Chosen. There's a band, mm-hmm. Pitch Green, that kind of was a branch of Chosen.
But I don't remember.
Pitch Green actually lasted longer, but they just didn't play as much. And then trying to think of another band. There was a band, the Sin and Stereo. I don't know how long they were around, but there was Matt DeVore and Shelby Smith. And Eric Curtis. They had a band.
Right.
And it was before Vile Jive, they had that band.
So that was the pre-Vile Jive.
If you want to call it that, I guess.
See, and Eric did an episode of one of these, and I think if people go back to Eric's episode, there's probably a good chance he mentions which band that was.
It was a cool band. They recorded over at Wade England's, and I have the demo. Mm. And I remember I played it one time. Eric got mad at me. Anyway, that was at the Java House. We played with Jalam. We played with them a few times.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was really good friends with them.
Yeah.
And our crowds didn't really go together either, but they were still a hard rock band at the end of the day.
That is accurate to what I was saying. You guys were really active. I mean, I remember
we played
seeing
about
your
once
name
a month
a
at
lot.
Least.
Yeah. Yeah. Your name was very out there. So how long did Pilot last, and who was in Pilot?
Pilot lasted until 2008. Now, keep in mind, we didn't play any bars in Bowling Green. We were not part of the Bowling Green scene.
You were more of the all-age circuit or just
festivals. But even in Bowling Green, there was no all-age circuit. Bowling Green has never been, I don't know why, to be such a big area, there was hardly ever a consistent place for all-ages shows.
That's true.
Now, the Java House was the one that lasted the longest that I can remember. But
and Spencer's had bands for a while.
It did. We never got in there.
We played there a few times, but I still...
I remember seeing you one time.
Walk in there today going, man, I get it. And now that they've had the extension built on, I would think that they might look into it more. But I guess some places just look at it as a money pit or a hassle.
Spencer's was a nicer place, too. And no, that's no offense to Java House. It was cool. I took a lot of chips.
Java House was really cool. It was like walking into your brother's room.
It was a great place to take a date.
It just felt like that old cool place to hang out.
Yeah,
and there was
it had the board games and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, I always have a special place for the job house.
Right. So who was in Pilot?
All right, so the Pilot started with myself, Wes Buchanan, mm-hmm. Tony Oswald, and Matthew Shepard, or Shep, okay. Shep Shepard.
Yeah, Shep.
So everybody knows him. And eventually we got this guy, Wade Tucker. Mm-hmm. He was in a band called Rivendell that we played with a lot.
Wow,
they were from Greene County.
Yeah.
And they've actually made it. I left out the factory. The factory in Cave City, that's where we met Rivendell. And we played there a lot. And it was an all-ages place that was there for about 2 years. And it was really good to us.
It was really cool.
And, yeah, a lot of people went to it. You know, people from Bowling Green and Glasgow came mm-hmm. to the Cave City. Cave City sucks. But on a Friday night, there was somewhat of an incentive to go there.
It gave the younger kids, and especially the ones that were, you know, had their license and was able to drive, we're all lucky at that point we had somewhere to go.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, so Wade Tucker, he was in Rivendell, and they split up or broke up or whatever, and he started playing with us in late 2002.
Right.
You know, basically he approached us and said, "Hey, you guys need a drummer. You know, this drum machine, you know, the gimmick is ran its course."
Yeah, the drum machine.
Yeah, but we were really drawing crowds. You know, 100 people at least, and it's more than any band I've ever drawn in my life since, just about. So, he was interested in playing. We said, "Sure, let's do it." He picked it up real quick. And it really improved us as a band. And I think everybody would agree with that. So he played with us until 2004. He had some issues. We had to kick him out. I mean, but that's not a knock on him. I think he's got his shit together now, and I think he's doing all right.
Right.
But, you know, in 2004, we said, "Hey, man, we got to let you go." And
this is part of it.
I called Matt DeVore, and he was interested in doing it. But little did I know, Matt DeVore was about to have Matt bit off more than he could chew that year.
And I think he still is.
He probably still does. But
he's always busy. I know
I'd say he was a great addition to the band. He was, you know, in more ways than one. But there was also a detriment there, and that he was just busy as fuck. And he didn't have time to play a lot of shows. And this is, you know, I would tell Matt this to his face. This is not anything he didn't know. Well, I don't think it is. But we get along today. So,
a good dude.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like Matt. So. But he was going back to college that year.
Right.
He got married that year.
Oh, wow.
And he had a kid that year. Oh, and on top of that, he was in the band.
He's in three bands.
Well, he was in the WKU band. And then,
oh, wow, really?
Yeah. That took up a lot of time. And then there was this whole valve job thing you know, regardless of what people want to think, it did get in the way of Pilot a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not mad at valve job. I'm just saying it was a trade-off at the end of the day for them to get, you know, a couple of our guys and us to get DeVore, essentially. So there was even one time they said, Matt, or somebody said, "Why don't we all just try to be one band? Nine motherfuckers in a room." And we did it one time. We tried to practice.
One time. That's all it took.
It was goddamn miserable. And I think, you know, Tony, he looked at me and he said, "Ah, it's just ain't gonna work. You know, Cody fucking hates this. We don't need to do it." And anyway, we played until 2008. Now, mm-hmm. for 2007, I don't think we played but one show.
Okay.
Just shit just didn't work out that year.
Right.
And when Tony decided to move to New York, when he graduated college, he said, "Well, we need to do our last show," which I'm glad he did. And it's it was a great gesture on his end, because I didn't think we'd ever have a last show.
Right.
But we did. I rented out a place here in town, and we had our last show. And, of course, we packed the place, and we've got it filmed. And I've never released the film. It's a 4-camera shoot, and I've got it pieced together.
It'll be in the vault.
People pre-ordered it and everything. Yeah. No, I need to get it sent out. We're just lazy, and, you know, like I said, behind the times. And I've had so much going on, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So Pilot dissolves.
Pilot dissolves, but just to put a note on some things, you know.
Yeah.
I learned a lot in Pilot. You know.
So what did you do between Pilot and Outhouse Etiquette Forming?
Oh, I did two or three other bands. In 2006, I started another band since Pilot was on the downhill slide.
Right.
And I was into stoner rock and extreme metal.
Right.
And I started this band called IMU.
IMU.
And it was a great band. And it had myself on the guitar and the vocals, and Josh London on bass and vocals, and Chris Chapman on the drums.
Yep.
And it was a three-piece, and we played a lot of shows, mainly in Louisville. By the way, Pilot, we still got a lot of Pilot to talk about, actually.
Okay.
Pilot had a bigger scene in Louisville than we did anywhere.
Oh, of course.
I didn't know if you knew that. But
oh, I do. I think a lot of bands from here had really good, not only opportunities in Louisville, but I just recently played in Louisville myself, and there is something totally different up there. I mean, when you go play a show in Louisville or Bardstown or Lexington, it is night and day between playing, I think, what we're all used to Bowling Green and how it is.
But well, Lexington sucks for us.
There's like there's an actual fan base of music. It's not about band following. It's people just go out to see bands in general.
That's true. Now, we had people follow us in Louisville. I mean, we played up there enough times.
We actually built a following.
Well, we had a huge following up there. And I say huge, 100 people. You know, 100 people is a huge following. And this was in the early 2000s, and metal was still a big deal up there.
Yeah.
And we got on a lot of shows. And there were several, you know, a lot of bands didn't like us because we were getting a big buzz. But there were certain, we had a radio guy up there. His name was Local Louie.
Oh, Louie, yeah. I actually saw really Louie nice last week.
Yeah, so that you played at that place. Where's he booking at?
No, I played at Diamond Pub.
Is he booking there?
But he was there to see the show.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. I'll ask you about that later.
It's Louie the local guy.
Yeah, Louie was really a big Pilot fan. Of course, he liked Luther. You know, Luther, a big Glasgow band.
Right.
And once they found out we were from Glasgow, he said, oh, yeah, we always liked Luther.
And that goes back to the beginning. Is Glasgow has really been an incredible melting pot of extremely talented bands, and Luther is just one of those that is way up on my list. I mean, I cannot put that CD down.
They're the heaviest band to ever come out of this
area. It's just
area.
A great band, great songs, and a great stage presence.
I mean, you know, they've been together like more, you know, I don't know, early 90s. So
I know.
25 plus years, but they've only got maybe 25 songs. Maybe 30
that's
songs.
All they need.
Yeah, that's all they need. Then.
Sometimes less is more. I mean, I'm not mad about it. Obvious.
I'm glad they're still together because they had, you know, they had two long gaps, so they didn't play at all.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but they're definitely doing good right now.
But also, you know, the only Bowling Green places we played after the Java House closed was if Western, the radio station there, the Revolution had a show.
Right.
They always put us on it, and those were great shows for us.
So did you play on campus a lot? Not only night class, but after night class closed, like did you do any of the South Lawn?
Only there was Revolution shows. Whatever they had, a fall and a spring show.
Mm-hmm.
We would play those. We usually headline them. And from 03 to about 06, we always played those.
Right.
Night class, we just played that one time.
Oh, wow.
That's it for Bowling Green. And if we played Bowling Green, it was up in the on top of Kelly Green's.
Mm-hmm.
Vic's. It wasn't a bar.
It wasn't Vic's.
It was where JD and a couple of guys were living at the time. We played up there. It was a disaster. Anyway, it wasn't their fault. Then we played a couple of, like, there may be a just a one-off show somewhere.
Right.
And we might play that.
So like some sort of festival.
Otherwise, Pilot made our name playing Louisville, and I rented the Paris Center every 3 months.
Right.
Down here in Glasgow. I made a shitload of money doing it. And I'd always get as many bands as possible to play. Well, not as many, but I tried to include all the good bands.
Like diversity.
Yeah. And, of course, at one time, it wasn't as many of those, but there was a pretty good choice of musicians to choose from. So, anyway, IMU played Louisville a lot, and we played Glasgow a handful of times, Bowling Green a handful of times, but not much. I remember State Street Pub let us play there one time.
Oh, yeah.
State Street was a place that would let anybody play, but it was like sparingly. It was one of those things.
State Street kind of had the same vibe, I think, after Java House closed. Like, State Street seemed kind of open to whatever.
Well, let's look at this. They were around when I first, you know, when I was in radio, and they had shows there all the time. And then you quit hearing about them for a while, and then all of a sudden they started having shows there again.
Right.
And then, there would be gaps, I guess, in time where they wouldn't have shows, but were they still open? Because there wouldn't be any reason to go to that place otherwise. That's not a knock on State
Street. They did change ownership a few times.
It's a nice place.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing bands on the other side of that, the Ellis Place or whatever it was called.
Yeah, yeah.
On the other side of
that. That's the fancy place.
Of course, we always played. We played, IMU played State Street side a couple of times because we were way too loud. I took a full stack in there. And,
it was loud as hell.
I was way too loud. And, you know, I didn't know any better. I was
23. It's rock and roll, man. You got to do it.
That was a cool band. I really enjoyed playing it. And we eventually, Josh had quit that deal and eventually got Rob Needles to play in that deal.
Right.
And then he quit, and then I got Mike Etherton. He played bass in that deal for a little while. And then we quit being friends, and that's why that band ended. So I'll talk about that if you want to.
That's up to you. I think a lot of people, especially listening to this now, obviously have the connection of you with Outhouse Etiquette. And that band has definitely been around for a decent amount of time. If Pilot,
you left out a band.
Oh, you left out a band.
You left out this band right here.
What do we got?
New Youth.
New Youth.
Now, New Youth was the best band I was ever in. I'll tell you why. This was been between 2010 and 2013.
Man, it's amazing. No, 12, when you say these years, it's like, that was literally like 5 minutes ago. So, that is so weird.
I had quit playing guitar for about a year after the IMU. I didn't even pick it up. And Austin Albany, I don't know if you know him, he has his own company that they're really kicking ass right now. It's called Sublime Media.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's a bass player. He's been in some bands. And he said, hey, I got some guys, and you know, we're kind of just a indie rock band, but we need a lead player. I said, well, I guess I'll do it. And I did it, and we became a rock band immediately as soon as I started playing with
them. Of course.
And it was a great band. I'll let you have that.
Thank you.
It was very alternative rock.
It's a cool
90s
cover.
90s, like, well.
It's got like a smashed
He just took a record, threw it on the floor. And I'll gripe with this. We packaged it in a hurry. It don't have our names anywhere on it.
Right.
And I wish it did. But anyway, that's, I think it's got 10 songs on it. And
13.
There's a guy named Ben Mosley played drums, a great drummer.
Yes.
From around here. And,
yeah.
And then the singer was Byron Kaseber.
Okay.
He's from, I don't know, he's from up there around Muhlenberg County or Ohio County, one of those counties.
The name sounds familiar.
This is the only thing he ever did. And he, of course, he had to drive down here to Glasgow to practice once a week. It was a pain in the ass for him, I guess.
I can imagine.
He was dedicated, and he played guitar, too.
Yeah.
And that was the best band I was ever in, because we had the least amount of stress and arguments and heartache.
But it only lasted for about 3 years?
Lasted very brief. Yeah. I wasn't ready for it then. We recorded this with Rory Willis. And Ben had a seizure, was out of the game for a while.
Oh, wow.
So Rory said, all right, or Austin and myself said, hey, why don't you play with us? We have some shows. And he did. And then Ben came back for a while, and we were about to pick things up again. And
right.
He had another mishap, put him out of the
damn
playing for a while. I think it was another seizure. And it was it. And it wasn't like we said, all right, that's it. It just never happened again.
Right.
But I wish it could have, because we wrote some good songs that never saw the light of day.
So the band was called New Youth.
Yes.
And it was formed between 2010 to about 2013.
We played our first show late 2010, probably in November, and it was a State Street pub.
Okay.
We played there a handful of times, played with Chest Rockwell a lot, played with, what's that band? The only real good rock band left in Bowling Green now is, Plastic Friends.
Yeah.
Played with them when they were there in their early days. Played with Possum Holler in their early days.
Yeah.
Played with that band with, Chuck Falcon. What was his band back then?
Oh, man. That was a good question.
He had a Gretsch.
He's had a lot of good bands.
Well, this band was around 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
Can't remember the name of that band, but we played with them a lot at Tidballs. That's the first time I ever played Tidballs, was with this band. I never played it until 2010 or 11.
Wow, so it'd been open for
I'd been going for a long time.
Yeah, they opened in 2001, so you didn't play there for like nine years.
No, but there's no way. Of course, I couldn't go until about 04.
Yeah, that's true.
Legally, but anyway. Okay, so Outhouse, you're trying to get to Outhouse here.
So, yeah, after New Youth around 2013, is that when Outhouse kind of came about?
Yeah, Rob had wanted me to play with him, even during the New Youth time. Me and Rob were always pals. He was in Leyden, the bass player in Leyden, and he had gotten in this rockabilly stuff a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't really into
that. He's damn good at it, too.
he's pretty good. He wrote some good songs. I wasn't a big fan of it. I'm more of a rock and roll guy. You know, my favorite type of music is either, heavy metal, classic rock, or the new wave, '80s and alternative '90s stuff.
You didn't look at like rockabilly or early rock and roll.
No,
you like heavy distorted stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's good songs,
right?
There's bands that wrote good songs.
Yeah,
I had done a lot of work with Hank Three at the time.
Yeah,
and video work, and that was my introduction to all that type of music.
Okay.
So I met a lot of people through Hank Three.
So did that kind of start to?
Well, it's still never
turn
gonna
you
my,
a little
it's,
bit.
No, it's never going to be my favorite kind
wow.
of music.
Maybe it's not your favorite, but you at least respect it, right?
I have maybe four albums of that type of music.
Yeah,
I don't have any Hank Three stuff, but there's Hank Three songs that I like.
When I listen to the record you all put out, I I put it in that kind of category. Now, maybe that's because of Rob's
That's what we're going for.
But your guitar playing had that kind of tone to it.
I just had a classic rock tone. That's all it was.
Well, with the whammy and the surfy kind of
I'll give you that. I got the guitar.
They kind of go hand in hand, I think.
Yeah, I got the guitar for that band. There's no doubt about
the big,
that.
It's a Gretsch, right?
No, it's an Epiphone. Just that white, just hollow body. Complete hollow body.
The big white guitar that you have.
And I got that for that band. So
he's watching an eBay.
Well, I missed it. I was sitting there talking. But it went too
I
high.
I told you I wasn't going to do that.
No, it ain't your fault, pal. I'm going to put an offer on it.
Fault.
This is one of my side things. I collect action figures from different things.
Yes, you do.
Anyway.
That is your episode 3 of a podcast.
Yeah, so
your wrestling fascination.
I collect the wrestling action figures, but I also collect the Star Trek and this.
You collect a lot of
different
cool
things.
Stuff. I'll give you that.
Yeah, so I got.
I'm strictly Star Wars.
You have to go over here and check out my pop cultural china cabinet before we leave. You know, it's got relics of the past in there, of action figures, memorabilia, and a little bit of rock and roll too. But anyway,
I see Jay and Silent Bob next to Pee Wee, so that's pretty cool. That sums it up.
Those peewees I had when I was, one of them I had, that actually, a lot of stuff actually is from when I was a kid.
Oh, cool.
And I've still had the Alf and the Pee Wee Herman over there.
Yeah.
And that Mark Paul Gosselaar autograph. I don't know if you noticed that over there.
That's cool.
It's his real autograph.
That's great.
And I waited in line 3 hours to get when I was 9.
It's too bad this isn't a video.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so.
In other words, Cody has a lot of cool shit in his little downstairs basement studio.
Well, Rob had approached me and said, hey, you know, I got this other guy I've been writing song or been playing with, just him and this other guy. And Rob had actually been in a band for a while.
And he came out of Leyden, right?
Yeah, he was in Leyden, but then he had a friend who was in Jason and the Punknecks, and the guy's name's Jason.
Yeah.
And at the time, he was in it with his wife.
Are they from Nashville?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I think they're kind of all over the place.
But right.
We end up playing a lot of shows.
I know they've played Nashville a lot, so I didn't know if they were a Nashville band.
Well, it's his wife, and I don't think they're together anymore, but her name was Polly. She's a really nice lady, and they had, at the time, had formed a real band. It started with just them.
Right.
And they would hire musicians for their albums, but on the touring, it would just be the two of them.
Right.
You know, on stage. He played acoustic.
Yes.
And she would play acoustic, and maybe mandolin.
Right.
It kind of mixed up a little bit, banjo or whatever. And they actually formed a band with a live drummer and a bass player, and Rob was the bass player. He has to do it. So they did like a mini tour. So Rob got to eat up with this rockabilly stuff, and he wrote these songs, many of the songs on this album.
Oh, good.
And he wrote a lot of good songs in that. So he said he needed a bass player. He said, I got a guitar player. I said, well, I'm not a bass player, and I don't want to play bass. And I was very, matter of fact about it. I wasn't hateful about it. I said, there's no reason.
That's your comfort
zone. I'm a guitar player.
Yeah.
I'm not going to benefit anybody doing anything else. So we got together one time, and I think maybe me playing guitar, the other guy playing guitar, and then Rob playing acoustic guitar, just the three of us. I said, you know what? I said, you don't need another guitar player. I said, if I'm going to do something else, or if I'm going to do anything in this band, I'll get a lap steel and just learn how to play that.
So how the lap steel came in?
That's how I started.
In?
I said, it can't be that hard. So eventually, the other guy,
it's nothing.
The other guy, Tyler, we called him the fucking new guy.
The fucking new guy. I've always thought that was
great.
His
name's Tyler. And they called him that because of when Rob met him, he was a new guy down there at the tattoo parlor. And that was in the early 2000s. And Rob was a body piercer.
Down there
at Furlong's Tattoos, and I guess Tyler was an artist for a little while.
So it had nothing to do with him being in the band. It was actually just the real nickname.
That was his nickname from Rob. It stuck. And of course, I never knew him as that because I'd always known him as Tyler.
Right.
Because he went to Barron County. We went to the same babysitter. We found out later when we were small children. Anyway, Tyler's a real good guy, and that's the only band he's ever been in. And Tyler's actually a really good musician, and he and his wife run a dog groomer business here in Glasgow.
Right.
It's called Canine Clips, if you ever need your dog groomed or whatever. Anyway, Tyler moved over to the bass because Rob had a bass and Rob had bass equipment.
Right.
And Tyler didn't have any bass equipment.
And he just wanted to be the lead singer,
he was going to play acoustic guitar, which he just ventured away from that for some reason. I wish he never did.
Well, he played on a few songs.
Yeah, he got
very
this
few.
Listen, over here behind you is all his stuff.
Yeah.
He bought an electric amp, an electric guitar, and I said, that'd be all right, but you still got to play acoustic for these certain songs. And old Lazy Rob, he just wanted to play electric. It was so much easier to play electric on all those songs for him. Anyway, so I said, I'll play the lap steel. I bought a lap steel off a buddy. He had an old lap steel from like the 40s.
Right.
I still got it and, put some strings on it. Decided that all the songs were a step down. So instead of E, the top string being E, it would be a D.
Right.
So I said, I'll tune D open D major. And I did that, and it worked out. And it was really easy to learn, the lap steel was. It took about a couple of weeks.
Right.
Really learned my placement on the right hand, on the fret.
You got comfortable with it and then found your way to do it.
The key to lap steel is in your left hand. No, right hand, I'm sorry. The right hand is the picking hand, if you're right-handed. And that's your pick pattern's where it's at,
right,
on the lap steel. And eventually I figured out a few, but not very well. I never was like a lead player on a lap steel. I could do a couple of, like, three notes tops. On
More of like melodies or something.
Yeah, if I'm going to do a solo, it's going to be like three notes.
Right.
I never was like a Robert Randolph type dude, which I've watched his videos.
Right.
He's badass. And, he was the reason now I'm not like a huge Robert Randolph fan, but I saw this guy. I said,
playing the instrument, you probably dug in a little to see other people.
He made it look pretty fun. So I thought I could probably do that.
Because there is a difference between dobro and lap steel, and not lap steel like the country guys, where they're sitting there with the full blown double neck lap steel country thing.
Well, that's a pedal steel. If you sit down, that's a pedal steel. So I would start off sitting down, and lap steel doesn't have the pedal, so it's just six strings tuned open. But I end up being more of a country player than I was a lead blues player.
Which still fits with rockabilly.
No, it does.
Because rockabilly is a merger of country
and
rock.
I'd like to think I could play with another band if they needed a guy to do that.
Right.
And give me the chord sheet or whatever the songs. it's a matter of just having a good feel for your timing. If you are going to hit a lick, it needs to be timed right.
Right.
So I figured that out in Outhouse, and it was simple, and it's all simple stuff.
And what year was this all forming?
This, in 2012.
12, okay.
This was been sometime in 2012. We decided, all right, well, I'll join your band, and I got the lap steel, and we jammed at my house out in Haywood. And eventually we tried out a few different drummers. We eventually got this guy, Nick Gabeau.
Mm-hmm.
He played drums, and he played drums for a couple of years, right about the time we tried to put out this CD, and about 2 weeks before we recorded this, he quit. He said, I can't drive to Tennessee anymore to practice.
Oh, so yeah, you are practicing at Rob's, I guess.
Well, yeah, dinner at his brother, Justin. That's Justin right there.
Right.
And Justin actually played in the band trombone for a while.
Didn't
work out. So Nick, I put him on the cover of this because he played and learned all these songs. And I even asked him.
He was
him,
part of the band.
I said, can you at least play on the CD?
Right.
Yeah, man, I'd probably do that. And then we met Chris, and Chris was, Chris is the best drummer I've ever played with in my life.
Chris needs an episode on here because, I know him as Doc Chapman. I think, I don't know why that's the name he goes
by. That's his rock and roll
name.
Everybody
up here that I talk to knows him as Chris.
Well,
and I think everybody in Bowling Green knows him as Doc.
He's a Glasgow guy, so that's why we know that.
And, right.
Excellent
drummer. I mean, begged him to be in my band, and he was like, I don't know.
I don't know if
I would have loved to have had him.
I think he's wanting paying gigs nowadays, but anyway, He learned these songs within a couple of weeks.
Right.
And we came down there to the house in Tennessee, got Rory. I got Rory to record this one too.
Right.
And he nailed it. I mean, and first take every one of them. So we didn't need
it. It's an outstanding record. If you don't have it, it should still be available. I know Mellow Matt's had it for a while.
I got two boxes of them down here below me.
But so, Cody has two boxes of these Outhouse Etiquette CDs. It's the one and only Outhouse Etiquette CD.
No, we got a whole another group of songs recorded at drums.
Just haven't put it out.
And, of course, we had to end. We'll get to that in a minute, but we had to end prematurely. And this next album, that one's more of a rockabilly album.
Right.
The next one, I wrote most of the songs. So it's going to be more of a rock and roll album.
Right.
And maybe even a
you should still put
classic
it out.
Rock. No, we're going to put it out. We're not going to sell it.
We're just going to put it online. I'm definitely backing you.
Yeah, we're just going to put it online. Some of the songs are really good. Now, there's a couple of country or sounded songs
right
on there, but Rob wrote a couple of songs, but I wrote most of them, and that's the only reason that is Rob was going to nursing school.
Okay.
And it took a lot of time off of him. In the process, we lost Chris, and we got Nick Kidd playing drums with us.
Yep.
And he's going to be recording. He actually recorded this newest album because he's got the software, okay, and he played drums on it. So we got the drums recorded as of date, and I need to get everything else on it.
Well, I know you just recently played your final show. What caused you all to end it?
Well, Rob, like I said, he's a nurse, so he's going to – he got a job in Nashville. He lives right outside of Nashville, and – he, you know, nursing schedule. I'm married to a nurse. They're unpredictable schedules.
It's tough, I think, to work around.
Well, they're unpredictable in that you can plan ahead, but you can't plan
too far.
And you can't plan too far in the immediate future either. So,
well, I know that Kevin, I believe, in Boomstick is also going to.
Yeah, he is.
Either nursing school or he's already graduated.
I think he's almost there. I filmed his one of the graduations.
So I can imagine that. Those guys may have the same kind of.
No, they do, because Wade's talked about it. Wade, you know, Pope worked another job where he would work at a factory, I think. And then, of course, maybe he's working at a medical place now, but, you know, his schedule was, you know,
that's
every
gotta,
other weekend.
That's
got to
be tough. That's it definitely
is
tough.
But, you know, at the same time, you know, Rob's 40. He just turned 40, so he's got to get his shit together, and he finally did. And not to say that he was in a bad place before. And Rob's always worked.
But you guys definitely had a good run. I mean,
we did have a good run.
Cool stuff.
But on top of that, Nick moved to Nick and his girlfriend bought a house in Shepherdsville.
Right.
Because he got a job in Louisville, and she'd already lived in Louisville. Right. So he, you know, would make the decision to say, well, do I want to stay here in Glasgow or do I want to go up there and be with her? And he made the right decision going up there. So if we got two guys so far away, it's going to be hard for us to, you know, jam all the time.
Right. It's so much different now, I think, at this age than when we were all 20. Because we didn't have the responsibilities and overload of just adulting.
Well, you got married a lot earlier than I did. I just got married in August.
Yeah.
But me and her have been living together for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've still been able to manage all of it. And I still think I can. But the days of being in two bands may be
over. Well, it's a matter of, you know, everybody wants to play music, but not everybody seems to be able to make time for music.
Well, what I learned is that, you know, I would much rather set aside 5 hours on a Sunday to jam.
Oh, yeah.
Than 2 hours once a week, because you're just not going to get that much
done. No, you don't get much done.
Especially without house. You know, we spend an hour and a half of that just to goof it off.
But you guys did have a good run. It's a great CD, and I know when it came out, it took me a while for some reason. I don't know what I was doing at the time, but I was involved in something. And it seemed like every time you were playing a show, I was playing a show. So it took me a long time to see
you guys.
You
came several, though. You came to see.
I did come to see quite a few. I loved it. I loved the show. I loved how you would, you know, because on the record, you're playing rhythm and the lap steel over each other. But live, you would play just the lap steel on the song.
There were certain songs on this album, it was more lap steel songs than there were guitar songs.
Right.
So there was only three guitar songs.
As a live show,
one,
it seemed like you had a really good balance and you guys had a good sound.
Yeah, you got to play the lap steel songs in the middle.
Right.
Because we ended up having more guitar songs than lap steel songs that we were going to keep playing, because some of these we'd eventually kind of quit playing.
But Outhouse Etiquette is now done.
We're
going to
put that CD
show
out. But it's not going to be in a physical form.
And you played at Tidballs,
Tidballs
for your final show. Who else was there that night?
Dos Cobras played.
Dos Cobras, there you go.
Played with JD and Josh.
Yep.
And they're great guys. And we had a decent turnout. It was about 50 or so.
We would have had one more free, but I was unable to attend, and I apologize before we started taping.
The thing about the Outhouse band is that we never drew. It drew the less of any band I was in. Hmm. Part of it may have been just because we alienated our own crowd because we were so over the top. And that was never meant to be. It was just kind of, we were, me and Rob especially, are just silly guys.
Yeah.
We can't take anything serious, and that's why we get along so well. There's nothing serious. Nothing's off limit. Everyone is to be offended. And everything. There's no limitations as far as the amount of humor that could be involved. And at some point, I started making the videos, you know.
Yeah.
And the videos kind of really did give us a new identity.
And I love the wrestling video was my favorite.
Oh, that was a music video I did for Henri. Yeah. Now, of course, you know, we had like the videos about us, though.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
You know, like where I went to rehab.
You were talking about the music videos. But you also did like guitar instruction videos.
Yeah, I did that. That was
the
Hot Licks came later. The Lap Steel instructional DVD was the first video, but that wasn't Outhouse related.
I don't know if I've ever seen that.
But it's on YouTube. I mean, just to let the fans in on it, it was a joke. It wasn't real.
Right.
And we used that as a catalyst to make a video about, you know, Cody is getting a big head. We had it behind the music.
You gotta look them up, man.
I mean, they're fucking huge on YouTube. They get a lot of hits.
I'm a bad interview.
So go
guy.
Type in
I've
out.
Done my homework.
Type in. You got at least an hour's worth of entertainment coming your way.
I will watch.
Thanks
that
to
tonight.
Me. So you got Outhouse Etiquette, Behind the Music, Outhouse Etiquette, Intervention. I get an intervention.
I did see something about your first drummer, Nick.
Well, that was
because we jammed together for a very short time. We almost had a band up and running, but his work schedule and stuff became an issue and it didn't work out. But he told me about a video that you had made of him. Yeah. And so we pulled it up and watched that on YouTube, but I didn't see any of the stuff.
It was called The Curse of Vascularity.
Yeah.
The Drummer's Dilemma. Because he was always aggravated, he was a real vascular man, and he was. He would go to the gym, worked out, you know, a very strict workout regimen he had.
Yep.
And he was very vascular. You see his veins, and you know, we were just a bunch of drunks, you know, and he would drink a beer or two with us just to fit in, I guess.
Right.
But bless his heart, he really didn't fit in with us. He's a nice guy, and I like him. But he was really out of place with me and Rob and Tyler.
Nick ended up playing drums a long time for Eric Croft, I believe. Crimson Croft is the name of the band. On another local music connection, off the top of my head, I believe Cindy Darst played keyboard on a track on the Outhouse.
She played on several of these songs.
Did she?
Yeah, she played. She was the only keyboardist I knew, and had a really... You know, she's a great piano player.
Oh, yeah.
And she played piano, like, on Too Many and the Blues Rock Blues and On the Wind.
I love Cindy. She's super cool to talk to.
Maybe, okay.
Cindy also has an episode on here.
Oh, yeah, I've heard it, yeah.
Yeah.
She played the organ, so basically she didn't it's not a knock on Cindy, but she was a piano player, and I was wanting, like, for some of these songs, like a real organ sound,
right.
You know, like a, you know,
the Hammond,
you know, kind of shit. So I hooked up one of my pedals, and I said, "Just get me an organ sound," and I controlled the pedal, the what do you call it, the spin,
right?
I have a rotary pedal, and I hooked it up, and I just spun it when I thought it needed to be spun. But she already knew the chords, so she hit the chords and did all the stuff. So she played organ on a lot of these songs. So she's on...
it was like a makeshift organ.
She's on at least seven of these songs.
Yeah. Well, I thought so. I knew she was listed in the
she
track.
She was a big part of it. Yeah, she got... You know, all the participants got their picture on the album.
Yeah. The album cover looks very much like the Sgt. Pepper album cover.
Yeah,
and you guys have pictures of all your friends and people that...
Well, no, these are the younger versions of us.
Right.
And that's Ryan Stiles. He played the saxophone on it.
Oh, yeah.
That's Blake Berrick. He won the contest to be on the album. And we got the guys from Otis. We got Steve Jewell.
Yeah, Boone's on
there. Boone Froggatt to play guitar. I had him play on Blues Rock Blues because Blues Rock Blues is really just making fun of what they do. And, you know, this blues stuff, you know,
yeah,
that everybody's into. And they accepted
the
invitation.
I got Blues Rock Blues.
And then.
That's great.
Oh, Lee Hammer. He played harmonica on several of the tracks.
Oh, fantastic.
Lee's a great guy.
Lee is awesome.
And Wes Buchanan, my friend here, Wes, from my oldest friend in the music business. He played didgeridoo on a song.
So there's a lot of local music connections on that record.
Yeah, I tried to get a lot of them in. I didn't get it, you know, we didn't get them all in.
Right.
And it was impossible to get what few we got. But, you know, I wanted to have... I had a spot for several people, but it just didn't work out. I wanted a violin, but I wanted to get Kerry to play violin on a song. Mm. It just didn't work out. And, you know, there's a lot of guys that had stuff to contribute.
So a lot of people with past episodes of the Sound Atlas are on this Outhouse Etiquette CD.
Yeah,
so
I don't know if Ryan's got
what a great way to put it all together.
I know Boone's got a show with Cindy.
Cindy and Eric Curtis.
Nobody's ever done this. I can guarantee it.
Not
nobody's
to that amount.
No,
no. I've tried to do it, but it's hard. It's hard to get everyone to nail
it's
down.
It's a testament to
time.
Being in the business for years and knowing as many people as I do, and them liking me enough to do me the favor.
Well, I think you're a likable guy. I've known you for at least 20 years. So with outhouse etiquette coming to an end, what is in the future for Mr. Cody Meek?
I don't know. I'm going to start another band, I guess, but I don't know. You know, I've got to decide at this point in my life if I want to, you know, accept all the heartache that comes with being in band. And all the, you know, nobody, like, I've got my shit pretty much together. Always have, but especially at this point in my life. And then you got to get with people that did. That was a great thing about that new youth band. Everybody had their shit together.
Then why did it last so, like, shorter than all the other stuff?
I guess other things happened. No, yeah. There wasn't no moving away. It was just this drummer mishap, and then Austin wanted to start a business, and right. he didn't want to play music anymore.
So growing up.
I guess. But I'll never grow up in that sense. I'll still have make time to do something, right. You know, something like this. Now, I tell myself I'm going to play covers until I was in my 40s. So I'm going to try to hold off as long as I can before I have to do that. We're going to see Peter the Freshman tonight.
Yes.
You know, none of those guys are in their 40s yet, you know. So
they're close.
They've sold out.
They're really close. At
an early age. Well, I'm not far from it, but, you know, I'm 35. I want to start a pop rock band that where I'm the singer and guitar player, but still very rock heavy, mm-hmm. you know, and but not heavy enough to not play tin balls. That's the thing. You can't be a heavy band anymore in Bowling Green. You just can't. And I can't afford to not play in Bowling Green. I know people there, and, yeah. and I have a little bit of a base there, you know, and I like going there. And it's just heavy music just doesn't go over there.
So technically, while this was once this is aired, it'll be a while from now, but. The last show with Outhouse Etiquette just recently happened.
Yeah,
about two weeks ago we're talking. Yeah. So have you had time to sit down and think, or did you already kind of
I've been go thinking into about it for
that?
A year.
Yeah, you've been thinking about that.
And that's one thing I think about stuff for a long time. But except for Outhouse, that kind of just came to be. And so did the new youth band. But everything else I've done, I've had enough time to think about it, have songs gathered. I got a handful of songs written. Not perfected, but written, right. And just got to get the right group of guys.
Yep,
and that's what it's going to take, and you know, to have a band. And I've got certain expectations that other people may not want to meet, and not that they're unworldly expectations. It's just that it's a lot to ask somebody, especially a grown man, to say, "Well, I want you to do exactly what I tell you to do."
Right,
and I don't want to come across that way either. You know,
it's hard. Yeah. I think it's hard to do that because. Yeah. It is, it may come off like that when you're actually just like looking for teamwork in a way.
Well, the best bands are organic, you know, where you got the guys and you kind of have an idea what you want to do. And then you start, you got an idea for a song, a riff or whatever.
Right.
And another guy contributes to that. That's the way it's supposed to work. Now, in Outhouse, it ended up being me kind of not telling the bass player what to play, but maybe me telling Rob what to play or me telling, basically I wrote a lot of songs.
Right.
And I may not tell them exactly what to play, but I said, here's how the song structure is. Right. You know,
had a vision.
We may have changed a handful of things.
It's hard to come up with something. And some things you can write and just be like, do whatever you want. I don't care. And then some things you have a complete, clear vision on how you want it to go.
Well, so. one disadvantage of doing it the way I was doing it in Outhouse is that it's not an organic process.
Right.
They feel, trapped or whatever. And, they don't get having much time to improvise mm-hmm. that whatever part. And not that I was against them doing that, because I wasn't. But I said, basically, it's got to have this part. It's got to have these parts in it. You do whatever you want to in those parts.
Right.
And sometimes it worked out for the best. Yeah, I mean, sometimes my way worked out. Sometimes it didn't work out. So, yeah, I wasn't mad about it at the end of the day. But
yeah. So what's your take on the local music scene right now as far as not only Bowling Green goes, but even the Glasgow area? Is there any bands that are out there?
There's a handful of bands in Glasgow. I couldn't tell you any of them. You know, Luther's still playing, but not enough to like be a big deal.
But enough to be something.
Well,
at least they're still doing.
They've got that. I tell you what, Luther—they're nostalgia at this point, and that's not a knock on Luther, but they've been around long enough. If they play every 3 months, they're going to draw a big crowd.
Right.
And they know that. So
but Richard plays in other bands, though.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he plays drums with somebody else.
It's the first I've heard of that. But I mean, I don't keep up with that guy a whole lot. So, yeah.
Anybody in the Bowling Green circuit you're into?
Oh, yeah, Plastic Friends. I think they're the best rock band. I thought Outhouse. I advertised this whole thing in the Outhouse last show. We were the last rock band.
Right.
I even wrote a song. I wrote a song called "I Am Rock and Roll." It's going to be on the new Outhouse album when it gets released. But it's about how
I have to agree with that title. We are, because you really are.
We were the last embodiment of the rock and roll. Rules or whatever. Not rule, but of the heart, yeah. Whatever that is. Yeah. You know. Because we kind of, Outhouse ended up being Rob wanted us to be a punk rock band.
Of course.
Or that vibe anyway. Chris, right. I'm not all the way into that vibe. I have to have a little bit more structure and rules. But anyway, I wrote this song because I thought at times that we were too raw for Bowling Green. I talked about how we painted the picture where with our videos where we were just too silly and we had these silly songs. And I hated that because I thought we were a really good band. And we wrote really good songs, too.
I think a lot of musicians saw the musical there, but people that didn't play music maybe saw it more as a...
I try not to include any novelty songs. Right. Now, there's some sleaze in it, don't get me wrong, but I try not to include all these novelty-type songs, Asshole and Love Songs, stuff like that, into this new album. I try to actually have good songwriting. And it's something that in this band I learned how to do was write good songs. And, well, I started doing it before, but anyway, as far as the scene today, I mean, this scene's still going. It doesn't need me to keep going. And that's I go to these shows now.
We're just a blip in the map.
Well, I mean, I'm an old goddamn curmudgeon, compared to a lot of the stuff that's going on nowadays. I'm the old man that says, oh, goddamn, they suck or whatever. Yep. Well, this is horrible. And it's not that the bands suck. I'm just not into them. There's a lot of bands playing nowadays I just can't get into.
Right.
I don't get it. And, me and the singer of Plastic Friends were talking the other day. He works here in town. He's a real nice guy. And he said, there's not a lot of guitar rock out there right now. Now, there are guitar rock
bands. I think there is, but you got to get out and see it.
Here's the thing. I'm not going to much shows, and that's my fault.
Yeah.
And I'm to blame for that. And part of it is because I kind of just like being here at the house and watching TV getting drunk here at the house instead of doing it somewhere else. But I love going out, and I do miss going out as much as I did. And it's something I wish, and I'm going to try, and I always tell myself to go more shows.
Right.
I try to check the Tidballs calendar to always see who's playing. And it's not a hassle because I usually call a friend, we have dinner beforehand, and I can't, I can't really go down there and get drunk because I've got to drive home. Yeah. So I got to limit the drinks, and that part is the only inconvenience. But otherwise, the scene will go on long after we are.
You are a contribution to it.
Well, I hope
obviously, from my standpoint, obviously Pilot and Outhouse Etiquette, as a fan looking at what you guys have done. You're very much a part of the scene and helped shape it into what it is and maybe inspired people that are out there today.
I don't think there's many of those guys left. I think they've even grown up.
A lot of them grew up. Yeah,
they either quit playing or they got good and did something else. a lot of the bands nowadays that I see are, I think Cage Elephant, when they got signed, they a lot of bands said, oh, this is, which I mean, let's get one thing straight. They're one of the biggest bands in the world.
They definitely are. They're bigger than what any of us actually know.
They're huge. I mean, yeah, they're pretty big. They're headlining festivals in England or, Europe right now. That's as big as it gets. So I'm not a huge fan, but I'm glad they made it. And I'll never knock their art. Their creativity, they're creating, they're doing it for making a living at it, and made a big impact. A lot of bands in Bowling Green kind of took that kind of ball and ran with it. This whole I don't know what you call it, the new alternative rock
just
of today.
Comes with the territory, whatever something comes along that's popular.
Yeah.
A lot of people seem to try and copy that, and I think locally speaking, just about any band that's come from this area. Area as in South Central Kentucky, I think there's always going to be some sort of, not necessarily a copycat, but something in that vein of a lot of people are inspired by that band. They don't necessarily
it's an inspiration. It's an inspiration, and it's a compliment to the original band that started the inspiration. So,
That's been going on for years.
No, that's been going on for about 10 years now. But because I don't know when their first album came out. But
tell you back when I got started in the scene, I started playing in the early, late 80s, early 90s. Everybody was trying to be Government Cheese because they were fairly well known.
A lot of bands
were trying to be the Blue Cha-Chas, and there were a lot of bands coming out of this area that the next span of bands coming up behind them changed their look, changed their sound. And so I think it just kind of comes with the territory. So it's nothing new. I think we're just referring to modern times.
Well, I go to the shows now, and even some of the bands Tidball would put us with some bands that didn't need to be matched with us.
Well, but that's a good thing. Some of the best shows I've ever gone to were super diverse. Like bands had nothing in common.
At one time it was. By the time Outhouse was going, it wasn't, because it helped us out, if anything.
It's kind of a hit and miss.
Well, it helped
us
out because this other band drew way more people. We couldn't draw flies and shit in Bowling Green. We just couldn't. we never could draw a good crowd in Bowling Green, and we barely did anywhere else. But it helped us. These other bands, the younger kids would come, and of course they wouldn't watch us, but they'd leave as soon as we got done, or as soon as we started playing, or as soon as the friends got done playing.
Right.
So I felt like an old man. I felt like I was me and Jake Ritchie, he ran sound there a long time.
Yeah, he did.
Real close friend of mine. And, we were old men in there, and we really weren't, of course, he's a little bit older than you, but.
I don't know. I guess
Jake's about 43. So, yeah. He was older than most people in there, but even when I wasn't, I felt like I was.
Yeah.
But really and truly, I was one of the older ones in there. Other than the people run the bar, the Tidball and Jarvis. In the security, I was one of the older ones in there. Even the night we played the other night at our last show,
I've kind of never really looked at that. I think sometimes I'll go home going, I was like the oldest guy in the room. I think it's like if you're all there to see a particular band, then age doesn't matter.
No, you're right. You know? But I think about statistics and stuff like that all the time. So at shows that I'm not playing at, I go to. I really realize that I'm. There's not very many people who started going to shows like I did that are still doing it. I'm one of the few. And even my friends that started with me, I can't get them out nowadays. Just the older you get, it's more of a chore.
It's hard.
And I hate that. I hate that it's come to them.
Well, and I missed your show because I had parenting things I couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, no, there's
so
all kinds of
part
issues.
Of it.
Yeah.
But it sucks because it was your last show and I couldn't be there.
Well, a guy filmed it. I filmed it too. It's on Facebook right now. And a guy that filmed it with his phone. And actually, it's not distorted. It's excellent footage.
So you got something good.
Yeah, we got a decent little footage out of it.
But it needs to be out there so that people. Sometimes people discover a band 5 years after they've broken up and get super inspired by it.
Well,
so.
and that's true. There's very few bands that have lasted 5 years.
Yeah.
And to discover them 5 years after they broke up, they would have to be around a substantial amount of time. Yeah. There's very few bands that were around that long. And that's not a knock on anybody. It's just the way it goes sometimes.
No, it is. Well, I think we've covered just about everything in your musical world besides getting off of various routes of talking points. Is there anything that you may wish to say that I missed out?
Well, I mean, we could talk a whole lot about the radio days. Yeah, that's how I met everybody, how I met you, and that was a big part of my life. I was 17 when I started, and I didn't work there. It was a flash in the pan compared to my life now. But
that was a very foggy time in my life.
Okay,
there's a lot of things that I did around that time that I don't remember.
Well, I was 17 when I
but
started,
I do remember coming on the show, and it was at the station up here, right? Mm-hmm. At the where the point is,
downtown Glasgow.
And I just remember I was kind of in awe of you because it's like, man, this kid's a hell of a lot younger than me, and he's getting all these cool things, and I can't get anybody.
You know how I got that job?
Return phone calls.
You know how I got that job?
No, I don't.
My mother knew the boss of the company.
Oh, wow.
And he said, hey, you got a teenage son. He want a job?
Yeah.
And she said, yeah,
because
yeah,
being a teenager into music, you had a knack for what was happening in the scene. So he probably saw that.
I don't know. I'd never met him.
The fact that if he knew you were a teenager and a musician, so to speak.
I don't think he knew that.
He didn't know
I think
that.
He knew I was a teenager.
Okay.
I don't think he knew that I was.
Well, she may have mentioned that.
I mean, for the 17-year-old self of mine knew a lot about classic rock.
Yeah.
More than most 17-year-olds, but I didn't know shit still. Compared to what I know now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know shit. But I knew more than average jackass in the high school. So that wasn't why I got that job, though. And I just got lucky. But anyway, I got that job, and that opened a lot of doors for me. I mean, I really have to hand it to old Steve Newberry, and he didn't know what he was doing for me at the time.
It was local access.
Oh, yeah, but that wasn't why I got hired. I got hired just to work there.
But like that was the name of it, the show.
Oh, yeah. No, that came later. I worked there probably 4 months before that
came
about.
Oh, you were just working at the station.
Yeah, I was just doing weather and news on the weekends. And then when the Point changed formats to the active rock format, right. I became a disc jockey. You know,
see, I didn't know any of that. Yeah, I just remember you had the local show.
I had every night, Monday through Friday, from six to nine, and then eventually from 6 to midnight.
Right.
And then Saturday and Sunday, I did a shift too. So
when was this? Late 90s?
From 2000.
Okay.
I started in October.
See, this
2000.
Is why I don't know this, because I was living in Nashville at the time.
Okay. October
so
to 2000.
I didn't even have the station range up here.
Oh, yeah. October of 2002, and I quit in June of 2003. So I barely worked there. I didn't even work there 3 years. Huh? Just shy of 3 years.
That's still a pretty decent amount.
No, it was for any kid. It was a good run.
But I do, for some reason, remember being on the show. I don't know which band I would have been in at that
time.
Well,
it was your solo deal, if I remember.
Oh,
because,
it was the percussion thing.
You had all these CDs, and I used them as liners.
Dude, I'm telling you, that was. I don't remember half of what
It was like a. It wasn't just one drum. It was like multiple tracks of drums.
I did. It's basically what people refer to as world beat or new age music. And I would go in and compose songs with a main rhythm. And then I would add melody to it by using like xylophones and bells and all that stuff. So I remember I made, I think, 2 or 3 CDs, and I actually started getting notice around here, I think because it was different. And I played at the same bars. I opened for some of the bands around that time that were really active in the scene, and it was weird.
Well, I remember seeing you play one time.
People liked it.
You played with a three-piece set up at Spencer's, probably one of the few shows I ever saw at Spencer's, and you were playing a full kit, and you had a guy playing a Rickenbacker bass and a guy playing a 12-string electric guitar.
Oh, that was Tomatoes.
Yeah,
but we went on.
It was no vocals. It was all instrumental.
Yeah, we went on this rank. We tried to become like an instrumental experiment band or whatever, just because we were having a hard time getting anything going with what we were doing.
But it reminded me of like a.
Yeah, but we only did like a few shows.
Like
it's
psychedelic
funny you saw
rock.
That.
It was psychedelic rock.
Yeah.
But a little, with more experimental.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But yeah, no vocals.
I remember that. Of course, it was. If I was going to Spencer's, I wouldn't know enough to drink. So
you remember that because you were a kid and sober.
I mean, for what it's worth, I remember a whole lot of the shows I went to over the years.
Yeah.
It was more meaningful back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a guy that ran sound at, there's two guys that ran sound at Kelly Green's, and this is just under the table. They let me in sometimes. White's one of them.
I didn't have any problems getting in.
Well, Brian White, and there's another guy, Roger Buchanan.
Okay.
And they would, he ran sound at the factory, and I think he runs sound for big country stars now, but. Sometimes he'd say, hey, if there was a band I liked, I wanted to see, like Gear or a Six Floor or Seven Limbs or something like that, Temple Hill, I'd say, man, I'd like to get in there. And he'd get me in like at the very beginning.
Just to watch.
And I could not leave the sound booth.
Yeah.
I mean, I stayed there the whole night, but I didn't leave. And I did it a handful of times.
So you saw a lot of good shows.
I saw a few, but, you know, I had to stay under the hidden back there in that soundboard. That happened a couple of times, that was a radio connection, you know.
Dogs are barking.
That's a Barney.
You have an intruder.
Somebody pulled on the driveway, I guess. But anyway, I was lucky, and that was all the radio connection.
Yeah.
But anyway, the radios, you know, it came to an end, and it was a.
What a cool experience have at such a young age.
I would still work there if, you know, there's a couple of things happened. that aren't even worth talking about. And, right. and I was mad about them at the time, but now I'm not. So, in the grand scheme, I would still work there maybe if I could talk to the original guy that hired me and say, hey, here's what's going on, you know. And it was going to be a part-time job. It was never more than that. But even though I was working like 39 and a half hours a week.
It's kind of evolved.
I started where I work now, and eventually I realized, well, you know, I'm working Monday through Friday. This Saturday and Sunday job's not as important to me anymore. That's why I quit. I eventually said, well, I'm not going to, there's a level of whatever I didn't want to put up with at the radio job. And not, it wasn't anything bad. It was a misunderstanding of anything, but, I quit doing that. I would love to work in radio again. Maybe when I retire, I can work in D93 or somewhere like that. I still think I could be beneficial in a, some type of classic rock or even the active rock setting, but for what it's worth, the active rock, you know, that's the stuff like Breaking Benjamin,
right?
And bands like that. I know a little bit about them, but I'm out of touch with a lot of that now.
Yeah, me too.
I don't really. Radio did break me of listening to mainstream radio. I really don't like
keep
it.
Up with it.
D93 is the only station I've really given time for. And I'll listen to the Revolution some, and I'll listen to the one that Bradshaw
you
has.
Listen to Revolution because they play you guys.
Well, no,
they play
Pilot. I don't know if they played any other band.
They play
know.
Outhouse.
Okay, well, that's cool.
They'll play local on the hour, like every hour.
I didn't have a clue, but I listen to them. They play a lot of 90s. They play a lot of 80s. New wave stuff. My favorite types of music is the new wave stuff of the 80s and early 90s. So they play a lot of that. And I like these specialty channels that you got on Sirius XM.
Yeah.
I could be part of that, I feel like I've still got the voice for it, maybe.
I was going to say, you were born with the radio voice. You sound the same today as when I met you when you were like 17.
Well, the thing is, I'm about 70 pounds heavier. Sits in, and that does take a toll. It does do something to your voice.
Yes, sir, you were quite the skinny little
It changes
kid.
Your voice. It really does. My neck has so much fat around it now. And, it's a little bit different. Of course, I've got tapes from back then, and it's cringeworthy to listen to them. I thought it was king shit.
I always thought you had a great voice. That's why you were on the radio.
Well, I thought it was king shit, but I didn't know anything. That's the thing.
You got to give yourself some credit.
I was the coolest kid in high school.
So, wrapping it up here, where can anyone listening find anything to do with Mr. Cody Meat?
Facebook's the best place. Just look me up on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. And
obviously, you've got several things on YouTube. You did like a funny, in a way, guitar instructional video.
Yeah, Hot Licks was
it's worth watching. I'll tell you. I watched every episode.
25 or 26 of them.
And they're fantastic.
I did 25 weeks in a row where I put one out.
Yep.
Maybe the last few I missed, and there was a gap between them, but. The point of doing that was to eventually maybe gain the likes and the views to get the attention of the company.
Yeah,
send me the pedal, play the other pedal or the app or whatever. It never happened. And it was cheap. I did it right here in this basement, most of them. And,
I thought it was well done.
So there were some masterpieces come out of that, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And then there were some that were kind of duds,
but those are on YouTube. You've got any of the Outhouse Etiquette stuff uploaded?
All the Outhouse, you can look up Outhouse on YouTube, find all that stuff.
Do you guys have anything on like Spotify or Bandcamp?
We never got into that. And that's something that we should have. Dave Barrick always tells me how to do all that. And I never have done it. And Dave's a great friend. I'd love to record with him, by the way. And if I ever see Dave, we always have a lot of time for him. He has a lot of time for me. I have a video production business. Of course, that's what I do for a living. Yeah, my worky job, and then outside of work, I do all kinds of, video production jobs on the side. You know, if you've got a music video you want filmed, you need to call me. I can do it. I edit it and all that. And I'm very cheap, not as cheap as I sound, but cheaper than most. And
it's good because...
Yeah, good quality.
Obviously, anybody can look up what you've done to kind of get an idea.
I made a music video for a guy named Brandon Atwell recently.
Uh-huh.
He's just a singer-songwriter guy around here.
Brandon's awesome.
Yeah, so you know Brandon.
His banjo playing is amazing.
Then I've made a lot of music videos over the years for different bands, and then made videos for Outhouse, of course.
Well, before we go, I'm going to point out the fact that you were in a recent music video of Blackstone Cherry.
Oh yeah,
and it's absolutely hilarious. So if you look up the video for
Bad Habits.
Okay, the band shot the video at the factory.
Yeah, the whole place we used to play.
In Cave City. And I know they got kind of their start there as well in a way.
Just like us. They started the same time we did. And they the same four guys.
Yep.
And which is really a testament.
It really is.
To keep the same it's four awesome. Members. That's a testament to be around as long as they have.
But the band's bus basically goes through a time warp and spits them out in the 80s. And they get off the bus and the first thing they see is you. So you're like in like this made up band. For the sake of
some a kind battle, of cowboy band,
you're in like
yeah.
a battle of the bands,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I know that you're in it and Shep's in it. Who else was in the band?
Gabe Feast was in it. A lot of the Blackstone friends are in that. Justin Bertram.
Band that you were in? They gave it like a funky name.
Tate and the Turtlenecks. That's an inside joke. All right. So the director of that video, Blake Judd,
yeah,
the guy that I've gotten starting a video business with. And at one time, we did a lot of stuff together.
Right.
Not as much now. We still do a little bit together. But he's directed a lot of music videos. And sometimes he'll throw me his extra work that he don't have time to do. He's not an editor. He's just a director.
Right.
But he'll hire me out to edit some of these stuff. And I actually did the behind the scenes for that video.
Okay. That's good, too. Because Tommy shared that on his
Tommy was a big part of the behind the scenes. So the Blackstone guys, I haven't followed their whole career, you know. I'll say this, though.
But you all kind of grew up together. I mean,
No, we did. I went to school with Ben Wells. He was a couple years younger. But those guys have kept as much. They try to keep, aside from being the same four guys, they try to keep as many local,
rooted.
They try
to. They not allowed anything to happen and take advantage of it.
That's true.
I think they when they come home, it's almost like, they have to shake all that off so that they don't get wrapped up in it.
Well, that's true. That's a good way to put it. But in the case of a music video, if they can, they're going to try to include their friends.
Yeah.
That, you know, even if it's just a
small part. All of their wives were yeah, they got a band their wives as well. And that was.
They try to include, in that video particularly, and they've done this in other videos, where they try to say, hey, we want to do this in our home, in our home area, if possible, you know. And get the local fan base, and then their close friends, and the people that watched them, helped them, and do all this over the years. You know, they want to include all these people as much as they can, and it for no other reason than just they like being around these people.
Well, and if you pull up the video for Blackstone Cherry Bad Habit, and when they get off the bus after the time warp, you'll see Cody, just pretty brief.
I'm kind of in the background though.
You've got on a giant like J.R. Ewing cowboy hat. You can't miss
when I was long haired, I wore cowboy hats all the time. The short hair doesn't fit the cowboy hat look, but I have a lot of them. I love cowboy hats. That's the only hat I really have time for.
Well, I didn't know you were in that video, and I watched it, and I just died laughing when I saw that. So that's cool. Well,
the Richard Young stuff was the best. Richard Young is a funny guy if you ever get to talk to him.
Yep.
He had some stuff that we couldn't even put in the behind the scenes. It was too funny, and he's a man without limits, and that's why I like him.
Yep. Well, Cody, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you doing this, and keep doing what you're doing. We look forward to seeing what you've got in the future, and hopefully you just keep being you.
Hey, I appreciate it, Dean, and I thank you for doing this, and I guess Tommy got lazy and didn't want to do it anymore. My old friend Tommy the Star. I'll tell you something about Tommy.
Go ahead.
I met Tommy when I was in radio, and I think this is the detriment of being a radio personality. They would ask you to host these Battle of the Bands.
Yes.
And those were terrible because there was a no-win situation.
Have to be nice.
Oh, yeah. It's not just that. I told myself I'll never be in one of those. That's not the way the arts is supposed to happen.
Right.
Creativity is not supposed to generate that way. And the bands that always won were usually the same bands. You know, Jalam or The Loft. I think The Loft maybe won two of those. You remember them? They were from Nashville.
I do.
Nice guys and a great, great band. But, at the end of the day, you're basing on who the crowd liked the most.
Right.
And who was the tightest. And those two things, and that's it. They wondered, who wrote the best songs or who. It was just tightness, stage presence, and crowd. That's what you're basing it on. So I did one of those with Tommy and met him, and I think he was kind of, I don't know, he was taken aback, you know, young kid, you know, classic rock DJ, kind of knew his shit. But anyway, we hit it off. We became pals, and he had the Blasting Fast and Loud show.
Yep.
And I actually went on and did one of those shows with him while I still worked for the competitor company.
Oh.
Or competitor company. Right. Excuse me. And I went on there as an alias, and I played some stuff out of my CD collection. So, you know, some Caius and some Stoner Rock, some Danzig or whatever I was into, and which I'm still into. But and he was really nice to let me do that because I think he didn't care that I was with a competitor.
Right.
103.7 The Point. He was with D93, and that was the number one competitor for The Point.
That was really the only.
I could have never brought him in there. They hung me on the cross down there in Glasgow. So, it would have been a big deal, let's put it that way.
Yep.
And then when I quit radio, he still had a lot of time for me. And we, you know, sometimes I'll still go up there and hang out with him. Very rarely, but I will. And I have a lot of time for Tommy, but at the same time, I don't see him hardly enough. So, yeah.
Tommy's a good dude.
Yeah. So that's my Tommy star. Just a touch of how we met. So.
Well, he's definitely been a great source for the local music scene, and you have been quite a long-lasting part of it. So thank you again for doing this.
There's not very many of us left, you know.
Hopefully,
we're going to see.
We're on our way right Peter now the Freshman. To go see Peter the
Josh
Freshman,
Hines,
which is also Chest Rockwell.
Yeah. We'll see, that's Chest Rockwell.
I did an interview with Josh,
So Josh is a long time.
You two are actually going to be probably close on the outcome of
it. Well, he's played longer than I have. He's a couple of years older than me, but he started playing probably in 97, 98.
Yep.
So he's got a little bit longer in the business. So he really has been around, and he's played the whole time. Hardly any gaps between his bands. And there's very few other guys who have stuck around that long. Matt DeVore is one of them. He stuck around a long time. And I'll have to say... other guy, you know, Josh Lennon, my friend Josh, he's kind of the same way. You know, his band now, the Josephines.
Oh, yeah. They're doing great.
Lindsay.
Zach.
Zach's been in bands for a long time.
I don't know what else Brad's done. But
I don't think Brad's done anything.
Yeah.
But Zach's been in bands for, he's a year younger than me.
He's on my list.
He
so
came,
I'm
yeah, he'd be great
to
at
an interview with
He
him.
Came to Pilot Shows back in the day.
Yep.
And that's how I met him. And then he started bands, and he's kind of always been in a band, too.
Right.
And he was in a big band for a while. Did tour all over the world. So.
And that just goes to show that is why Russell started these podcasts, because our music scene is rich and very connected. And you, sir, are very much a part of it.
Well, I appreciate it, Dean. Thank you for doing this. And I'm going to get a ride with you down here to the Rib Lickers.
Let's go.
Yeah.